The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the Crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen right here on 960theref.com.
Episode 106, the Crossover Podcast, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. And, of course, their location now open in Five Points in the old Waffle House location. Chris Brain from the Home Team, David Johnston from The Morning Show. It is Georgia South Carolina week. We'll actually talk a lot about that. And a little bit of a Braves postmortem, as well as we're recording this on a Thursday, the day before Wednesday. That was game five of the Braves and the Cardinals, and what turned out to be, because the Nationals beat the Dodgers, what has to go down as one of the worst days in Braves history. You had game six and seven of the 91 World Series, the Jim Leyritz homer. The thing about the Braves getting blown out was at least it was just like, you know, you're not harping on just the, you know, some where like Jim Leyritz ends up beating you, right? It was like 10-0 after the top of the first inning. But
you weren't emotionally invested for 3 or 4 hours and then lose.
Yeah, and that had Ed Sprague do you in. Ed Sprague
did it, yeah. Jim Leyritz, Kirby Puckett.
Yeah, well, Puckett at least was a Hall of Famer.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But but then I think what made yesterday, it's got to be in the top five of the all-time worst days for the Braves, was the Nationals beating the Dodgers to advance to the LCS. So the team that you actually beat in the NL East this year is still alive, and you're going home, which Atlanta fans are completely used to.
And they had never won a playoff series before either.
No, they hadn't.
So now they've won a wild card game and a playoff series.
Without Bryce Harper. With Bryce Harper leaving them for a division rival that went 81-81.
He's a good example. Now you can throw that. I didn't even think about that. You can throw that in there. It's like the Virginia Cavaliers going to the Final Four after Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
You know, the Dogs going to the Final Four after Dominique.
Yep.
There's examples of that in sports and throughout history where you lose a great player and your team the next year actually is better. Or maybe they're not better, but they advance farther in the postseason.
Yeah, and there Washington is. The Phillies made the big splash. That was the other thing. He left for a division rival.
Yeah.
And so here Washington is now in the LCS, and it's just, as everyone drew it up, the Cards and the Nats.
Look, all right, because you can remember this better than I can. What was the low point for the Nationals this year? Were they 10 below 500? They were scuffling bad.
Yeah, I remember
was it worse than that?
I can look it up, but I remember when they didn't play the Braves till like the end of May. It was a two-game series in Atlanta, and they won both of them. And at that point, it was like, yeah, the Nationals were, you know, pretty far below 500, and the Braves had gotten to the point where I don't think they had quite taken into first place yet, but they were on their way. And but Washington came in and won those two, and then for that, there was that period of time when basically the Braves and Nationals, you know, over like 30 game stretches, they were like 24-6, and Washington was playing so well, but the Braves didn't never gave in. Let's see, they were 31-19, or they were 19-31 on May 23rd.
Okay. And so they were 12 games below 500, and they ended up winning. Did they get to 90 wins? No, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had 93.
They got to 93.
Wins, I believe, yeah.
So that series I'm talking about, when they came to Atlanta, they were 23-32. And they won both of those games. They won 5-4 and then 14-4.
Yep.
And those are the first two games of the season. That was May 28th and 29th. They hadn't faced Washington prior to that. But so the Nationals were 23-32, 9.5 games out of first, and won both of them.
That was kind of the beginning of the end for Kevin Gausman, that 14-4 game.
Yeah.
Wasn't his last appearance for the Braves, but when you give up 8 runs in one inning, the writing is suddenly on the wall.
Hey, that sounds familiar. Oh, wait, it was 10 runs in one inning yesterday.
So that was a Gausman performance yesterday. Well, anyway, but what I was going to say is the Nationals, yes, they're the wild card team, but record-wise, they've been as good as anyone else in the National League in that span, if not better.
Yeah, for
sure. So, you know, they're a wild card team, but they're a strong wild card team. In fact, I looked at the betting lines today, but who's favored in this series, the Cardinals or the Nationals? Might be the Nationals, even though they're on the road.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
It might be just about a dead heat.
Because I did see last week, that I thought it was interesting, where the odds to win the World Series for the NLDS teams, the Braves were ahead of the Nationals, but for winning the NLCS, but to win the World Series, the Nationals were actually favored over the Braves.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
It was pretty even, actually, too. It was like 12-1, 13-1, something like that.
So Vegas is sitting on it that, hey, even though the Nationals are a wild card team, they're strong. And they, you know, with Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin,
who wasn't even any good against the Dodgers.
No. But then again, the Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw, so there's your playoff.
Boy, I feel bad for him. He's been such a great pitcher, and then he's put into this spot by his manager over and over again that he's not accustomed to. And, you know, you've got the small sample variance that kicks in, too, and he ends up becoming just this goat, like, over and over again.
Yeah, but that's what he's going to be remembered for, sadly.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, to blame Dave Roberts for that.
Yeah, and he's been – who's the best pitcher of this century?
He is.
Yeah, over Verlander?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Kershaw is. And
Kershaw, yeah, but – what's his reputation?
It's
the postseason.
It's going to be some of those, I mean, it was two pitches, right?
Yeah.
Back-to-back home runs.
And I heard Tim Kirkson say he's never done that in the regular season, and he's done it twice in the postseason.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But I bet both of those times where he came in relief.
Yeah.
I don't know the first time. No, last night was. Sure, yeah. I don't remember the first time, but.
Yeah. That's bad for the Braves.
Oh,
they had a chance to be the home team in the NLCS.
It was just awful, but you know that was the thing. At the Braves advanced, I almost rather would have the Dodgers been the team because Washington would have been a live dog against Atlanta.
Oh yeah,
would you rather have lost to them in a LCS or the Dodgers? I guess at least you'd rather be in the LCS in the spot the Braves are in right now. The thing that at least with the fifth game. There isn't a bunch of, like, you know, going back and, well, there was this move and that move and maybe this could have been different. I just – when you think about the three game fives, the two, you know, last night as we're recording this, and then there's one tonight with the Astros and the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
You had – so Washington and L.A. get to the fifth game of a division series with Walker Buehler and Steven Strasburg. The Cardinals had Flaherty, who I might have just, like, taken out of the game.
I was going to ask you that. When you get 10 runs in the first inning, and you know at that point it's like there's a 99.9% chance you're going to win the game, and you've got game one of the NLCS coming up on Friday, 2 days later, I know it's kind of spitting in the face of karma, but do you say, hey, Jack, we'll pitch you Friday?
Well, and because is he even – can he start even game two now?
They know because they left him out. Threw over 100 pitches.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't get that.
I could see, like, all right, you know what? We got a 10-0 lead. They've got Acuña, Albies,
throw
and Freeman up.
Two.
Right.
Yeah.
Get us through the first inning, and then we'll have somebody warming up. But, yeah, so they – I didn't realize they kept him in there that long. So he won't even be able to pitch now in either the first two games.
So 4 days rest would be, let's see, what was yesterday? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday – Sunday,
because one
they don't play on. Let's say they won't play. Well, no, they would play Friday and Saturday, and then Monday would be their next game.
So that's when he would pitch.
Yeah,
but he won't be available.
So I guess you could say, well, he'd be available 3 and 7.
Yeah,
so maybe that's what they're thinking.
But it turned out they didn't need him, but they had him for Game 5, and the Astros are in a fifth game today with Gerrit Cole. I don't know how did it end up that the Braves. The option for them in Game 5 was a guy they had demoted to the minor leagues for 2 months during the summer.
Because they got it in their head that Soroka had to pitch on the road. And Soroka pitched Sunday, the last Sunday of the regular season, so he could have started Game 2. He could have started on Friday.
Yeah, on his regular rest.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
they
I know
didn't
they had
do that.
They had the home road splits because three of the four starts he made against the Marlins this year were in Miami. So his road ERA was better than his home ERA.
Yeah, and he did. I mean, he shoved at St. Louis. I mean, he did have a great outing all the road against St. Louis. But the trade-off was they only had him for one game.
Well, then I would add, like. So did the Braves think that Soroka wouldn't have been capable of throwing a one hitter against him in SunTrust Park?
I know. That's what I don't get.
I mean, that's.
Would you rather have him pitch one game on the road or two games at home?
Yeah. Well, or
two games at home.
When it comes down to a do-or-die fifth game,
yeah.
And you look, Dodgers have Buehler, You got Strasburg.
Yeah. Anyone?
Garrett Cole.
Anyone?
I'm not familiar with Glasnow for Tampa, but I don't think they demoted him to the minors for 2 months. But so the Braves had it in them. If we get to a fifth game, we're going to have this guy that we sent to the minor leagues for 2 months is going to be who we turn to. And he had been good.
Yeah, even though he'd been good and he had a great performance in game two.
Yeah, but, and then, they had 9 runs with only 1 out. I'd like to point out, too, that 1 out they made was intentional since it was a sacrifice.
It was a sack bunt.
Yes.
Yes. And then the rest of the inning was just a nightmare. I mean, Freddie's error.
McCann.
The 2 bases loaded walks.
Yeah, McCann's
strikeout wild pitch.
Where Ozuna didn't even start running at first.
No, I mean, it was a literal comedy of errors.
Oh, Fried came in and walked Flaherty. That was another. They walked the pitcher in that inning.
Yes. Well, so the first batter Folty faced was a walk.
Yeah.
First batter Fried faced was a walk. That was the pitcher. And then Jackson came to start the third, and the first batter he faced was a walk that came around to score. So all of those, I mean, it was just, it wasn't one thing. It was just Atlanta-ing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, and I just think the biggest thing is that Atlanta got to that fifth game after a great, great season, and they decided that we're going to set up our pitching rotation that if it gets to a fifth game, the guy who's going to start that game, we sent to the minors for 2 months.
The Cardinals were in the – they had to put all hands on deck last weekend to hold off the Brewers and win the division. And the Braves knew that they could set up the rotation.
No.
And didn't.
Oh, but
Soroka's got a pitch on the road.
Yeah, his ERA at home was like 4-something. His ERA on the road was sub-2. Like, yeah, okay. He pitched like 26 innings on the road this year in Miami.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
Are they good? No.
They're not. They're no. Yeah. They weren't good. So here we are again with the Braves. And to add on to it, it was the Nationals rallying to beat the Dodgers to advance to the LCS just made the day.
So I heard
even
you saying,
worse.
Too, about the Braves being older than the Nationals and the Phillies and their lineup. Now, is that right? Is that what you're saying? Because that's an interesting
Well, the average
stat.
Age of the for St. Louis, the Braves had an
older
overall lineup. Yeah.
Now, granted, if Donaldson doesn't come back and you put Austin Riley at third, and then if Waters or Pache take over one of the outfield positions, I guess the Braves will get younger next year just because of that. But still, that's an interesting note that the Braves – like the team and McCann now he's out they'll get younger next year just because he's not going to be back, but you know, it's still one of those things where you can't just sit there and go, hey, we've got Ronald Acuna, we've got Ozzie Albies, and we've got Austin Riley, we're going to win 10 straight division titles. You don't know that.
No,
at all.
Look at the Mets have got DeGrom, who might win the Cy Young again. Syndergaard, they kept Zach Wheeler, and they got Marcus Stroman at
the
trade deadline.
For Stroman.
They've got the guy that's going to be the rookie of the year, Pete Alonso.
Yeah.
And they
He's got a good shot at that.
Yeah,
yes.
He does. And they win 86 and 76 this year. I know they just fired their manager, and I know it felt like, you know, the Mets are the Mets, but when you look at it, and like, because I had to do a double take too. I went, wait a second, the Mets were 10 games over 500 this season. You know, they weren't awful. I mean, the Phillies were a disappointment, but they were 81-81, and the Nationals are sitting there with 93 wins, and all those teams have better pitching rotations than Atlanta, and that still is the real hang-up for me with the Braves, and I think it ultimately doomed them here when it's Fulton Evich that they had to turn to in this fifth game. After Soroka, that's it. You got this one guy you definitely know looks like it's going to be a stud for a long time. But beyond that, I mean, the Braves rotation, what's it going to be next season?
I was trying to figure it out this morning. I mean, I put Fried in there.
Yeah.
And then after that, I mean,
is Keuchel back?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think he's back. I don't think Donaldson's back. I may be wrong on both of them, but
they might end up bringing him back.
Donaldson?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the relationship with Anthopoulos, I think, gives him a better chance there. But if you bring Donaldson back, that's another year that Austin Riley's not playing third base, which is his natural position. So, and if they don't bring Donaldson back, he's definitely made himself some money for somebody, you know, to sign with somebody next year. So, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with that. But then I thought Folty, I mean, as a third or fourth guy, and then I would assume Kyle Wright's going to get the first dibs to being part of the rotation.
Yeah.
And then
Tehran is gone. He's got to be gone now.
He's got to be. I just can't.
He's been around since 08.
And is he 30? He's not even 30, is he? I mean, that's a crazy thing.
Yeah, he might not be, but he's –
We talked with Bill Shanks this morning on the show, and he was like, I think at this point you could take Tehran's $11 or $12 million and use that for something else.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. And maybe he's at the point, too, where let him go somewhere else and see if it can just – be better for him. I don't have anything against him.
No,
he's been a good Brave.
He's had a solid long career, but it's just it's time to move on.
Yeah, that's kind of how it feels. But
we need a new opening day
starter. Yeah, I know exactly.
Yeah, you're after Soroka and Freed, and I guess reluctantly I'd say Fulton Evett, sure. But then after that, you still have two holes there, I guess.
Bill said he was like, "What if you had a Dansby Swanson?" Fulton Evett trade to the Indians for Kluber and Lindor. And maybe there's some other parts in that, but that would be the big ones there. Is like, could that be, there could be something like that in the offseason.
Okay. That sounds like the kind of trade, though. I'm like, would the Indians do that?
Well, I guess it depends on if it's a financial thing compared to a player.
Just a
thing.
Straight up, like.
Because money wise, that would be the Braves taking on salary, I guess.
Yeah.
But.
Because, like, Kluber and Lindor for Fulton Evett and Swanson seems like a pretty easy.
Just that itself, but I don't know if he meant there were, like, maybe other pieces. There could be other pieces.
Right.
I guess he was just saying, as an example, if you were looking at Fulton Evett coming back, is Swanson untouchable, which I would think not. I mean, he's only the worst hitter with runners in scoring position in the majors. I know he was better in the playoffs, but.
Yeah, it was five games.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think there's going to be a couple of things the Braves do this offseason that we have no idea, so it's kind of hard to, at this point, try to figure everything out.
Kind of a scary thing now, too, is going to be that those three guys in the bullpen they traded for ended up really good. And so are the Braves just going to be all three, Martin, Green, and Melanson, they're just going to come back and bring them, put them out there? Because Green was having, like, a career year at whatever. He's 30 or 31 years old. Mm-hmm. Melanson's been around forever, too. Like, are they going to just count on, those guys will be just as good next year as they were this year?
Are they all under contract for next year?
I believe they are.
Are
which
they?
Is part of the,
okay.
I don't know about Martin so much, but I think Melanson and Green are.
And I'll say this. I mean, how much did the series potentially turn with Coldplay going down, with Chris Martin going down? I mean, we don't know, but that was a huge moment in the series where you're rolling him out, he comes out on the mound and throws, one pitch, and and then next thing you know, here comes the guy.
Yeah, here comes
and
Luke.
I hate it for Luke Jackson. He didn't do anything. He's trying his best, but it's just the what it represents that we had to make this gigantic bullpen trade thing because of him. And all of a sudden, here he comes rolling in a tight game that they eventually lost.
And immediately gives up a meatball to Goldschmidt.
That, literally, that might have been the series. I know that cut it to 3-2, but it completely changed the complexion of the game.
It did. And I'm with you on Jackson because he was in a role that he just wasn't cut out for.
Yeah.
But overall, when you look at his numbers this year, he wasn't as terrible as we think
right.
he is, but it was just in all these like high leverage moments.
Exactly.
He stunk.
If he comes back next year as part of the B bullpen, I'm fine with that.
He'll be fine.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
But there's no way he needed to be the closer.
Exactly.
And then here, I know he wasn't closing out that game in game one, but he comes right in to face Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
It was just.
So maybe the Chris Martin injury was what completely maybe changed the series.
Yeah.
But there was a lot to go around.
Yeah,
blame wise.
All right, it's the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, and also now in Five Points. Chris and Dave with you as we'll take a break and we'll talk some football because that's pretty much what it's going to be from here until the end of the year now, with the Braves season coming to a just another disastrous end.
Duh.
With, I mean, just a postseason record, 10 runs, 9 of them scored before there were even 2 outs in the top half of the first inning. But what just made it even worse was later that night when the Nationals beat the Dodgers.
Let me give you a list of the Cardinals in the starting lineup that didn't score in the first inning. You ready?
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
There you go. They all did.
Was it? They sent 14 to the plate, right?
Yep. Fowler scored twice, and everyone else scored once.
Yeah.
And they sent 14 to the plate.
Yeah, it was one of those deals, too, that I guess Flaherty came up again in the second inning, and it's like, oh, the pitcher's hitting already again in the second? Something didn't go right.
Something Wong, in this case, Colton Wong, who he had the sack bunt.
Yeah.
So how about that? So he has a sack bunt in his first at-bat in the inning, and he still got a hit and scored in the inning.
Yeah. Like, that was the only out the Braves had recorded, was the one the Cardinals made on purpose.
And they didn't get another out recorded until Goldschmidt flew out.
Yeah. Imagine that.
I know.
Goldschmidt had to save him by flying out.
I know, exactly. And then after that was the strikeout wild pitch that just comedy of errors there just summed it all up.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick little break here, and then we'll come back. We'll talk some of the football this weekend, including Georgia and South Carolina. It's the Crossover Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes or listen anytime on demand at 960theref.com.
True Italian food has returned to Five Points and brought some friends along, because Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen is now open in Five Points, Athens. At the new Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen, you'll find all your Italian favorites, from pizza to calzones and baked ziti, along with sandwiches, salads, wings, and more, plus a full bar for beer, wine, and cocktails. It's time to eat at the now open Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen at Five Points in Athens, and also in the Manders Crossing Shopping Center off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
Episode 106, the Crossover Podcast, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville and also now in Five Points. Chris Brame, David Johnston with you. Georgia, another massive favorite on Saturday as they kick off at noon against South Carolina. And here's how far this program has come now, really, since 2016. So in 2 seasons plus now 5 games, is we've got a scenario on Saturday where Georgia played a night game the previous week. Georgia's opponent did not play, and now the game is going to kick off at noon, and that's not even, to me, like a factor worth worrying about. Whereas like 2 years ago, that would have been a legitimate concern.
Angst.
I mean, well, think about that. We played Sunday at South Carolina in 2016, then played at noon that following Saturday and lost to Vandy.
Yeah.
And there was much hand-wringing about that. But here with this scenario, late game Saturday, your opponent didn't play, the game now is early at noon, and I'm like, eh, no big deal.
And you're a 24.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
No, I know. Now, granted, the travel now to get back to Athens is not as hard as it used to be, you know, with the
come right into the
airport instead of having to fly to Atlanta and bus back over. But all that being said, you're right. There's not the angst of what you used to have. And the Dogs will host Kentucky next Saturday, and there won't be, I would assume, any angst for that either, because they're going to be another 25-30-point favorite in that game, right?
Yeah, so, that one will be at least 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, so you're talking between Tennessee, South Carolina, and Kentucky, the 3 games Georgia plays in the month of October, a combined what'll end up being like 75-80-point favorite over those 3 teams.
Right, and Georgia's already covered the first one, thanks to a non-offensive touchdown
late.
And a goal line stand.
A goal
line stand.
At least a
5-yard line stand at the end of the game. And
did you catch Sean McDonough making a little comment about that before at the – well, for some people – it's not over yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I know he put it out there like, well, I guess this is kind of obligatory now, but I do need to mention that this game is still very much in doubt.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was a great goal line stand for the Dogs. That's all.
Yeah, and a huge scoop and score by Crowder with
Crowder,
that hit by Stokes.
The hit by Stokes. And what did you think of just do you think there should be as much put on about the slow starts? And I mean, Tennessee did lead 14-10. I mean, there's something to be said by that for that. Georgia did score the final 33 points, but what's the bigger story?
I think in the end it was Georgia just they won a route again and on the road. And would you rather just come out and pedal to metal from beginning to end? Yeah, absolutely. I'd rather not give up like a 70-something yard touchdown pass to a team with a freshman quarterback making his first start. But it was also good to like fall behind on the road. That place was raucous again and realize like this team's not going to sweat that and they're not going to panic. They're not going to get out of what they do. You got as cool a customer at quarterback as you've ever had or seen with Jake Fromm, and you just know you're in good hands. And like to fall behind and be trailing, 14-10 and then 14-13 on the road with Neyland Stadium, as loud as it had been since probably like the 90s or something, and know that that's not even a problem is, it was a good little test to get taken through.
Do you expect? But let's break that down a little bit further. So Tennessee hits a big play. That's one of their touchdowns. We saw Murray State hit a big play for their touchdown. Georgia, I guess they're now the only team in the country that hasn't allowed a rushing touchdown.
I believe that's it.
Or is it group? Or is it Power Five?
I think they're the only team in the country
that has allowed a rushing touchdown. The Dogs have not allowed an FBS sack. The only sack this year was by Murray State on Fromm.
Yeah.
So there's some interesting stuff that Georgia has cooking. But that's kind of what I was going to ask you is like, all right, this touchdown that Murray State got, the touchdown that Tennessee got, yes, they happen, they count, but they were kind of fluky plays that the defense gave up. And we saw the defense make up for it at the end with the sack and the scoop and score. So to me, it almost cancels out those touchdowns, but getting Tyson Campbell back will be huge. I don't know if it's going to be this weekend or not, but I mean, this is a guy that I've seen now in a couple of mock drafts for, I guess, 20, would it be 20 or 21?
I guess 21. Like, he'd only be a junior next year.
He's so, got DeAndre Baker stuff going as far as where they're projecting him in the draft. So, I mean, that's a big loss to not have him out there. And especially in the Notre Dame game when you lose him and Stokes.
Yeah, and still
that's gigantic.
That's where the depth has really come in handy for the team.
Exactly.
But, I guess with Campbell, it's a foot injury too, which is a little scarier when you're a DB to have to be dealing with one of those.
Right.
But, Daniels come in, and Stokes was back on Saturday and had a huge game for him against Tennessee. So, but this is also maybe the trade-off. And, we talked about it some over the summer with all the discussions centered around havoc. Last year, when you looked at Georgia defensively, the opponent's opportunity rate against the Dogs' defense was, pretty good. And so teams were able to move and sustain some drives. But over the course of the game, if they weren't able to hit any big plays, Georgia was going to shut them down. And it was going to be harder for them to score. And so maybe that was part of the trade-off. You're a little more aggressive on defense, trying to go for a little more havoc, and now you are more susceptible to big plays than they were last year because Georgia was amongst the best teams in the country last year and not allowing explosive plays where we have seen a couple now this season.
And that makes sense. I mean, if you're going to gamble, you're probably going to get burned a little bit.
Yeah.
If you're going to play it safer, you're not.
Yeah.
So I get it. So what ultimately would you rather have? And if you can create more havoc, even if you do give up a little bit, then I think that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I want both.
Yeah, exactly.
I want havoc and not big plays.
Yeah, I want a sack or a tackle for loss on every play.
Yeah, the only thing that continues to be the biggest head scratcher, and it's not even just isolated to this team because last year's team had a problem with it too, is the Georgia's inability to pick up short yardage on third and fourth downs is really baffling because you've got the backfield that Georgia has coupled with the greatest offensive line in the country and third and one, fourth and one, third and two, fourth and two, those downs and distances, Georgia ranks 117th in the country in their power running. And that makes no sense.
We can figure this out, though. So DeAndre Swift is, if not the best running back in the country, he's one of the top two or three.
Yeah.
But he may not be the best short situation guy for the Dogs, and I think it's Harrion.
Yeah,
maybe he should get the ball a little bit more on those situations and see what happens. He's just got that nose.
Yeah, Harrion, or I mean Zamir had he didn't play at all against Notre Dame and had some more carries against Tennessee. I'm a fan of the quarterback sneak, I don't think enough teams do. Georgia doesn't feel like Georgia ever does it.
If Jeff were here, I know what he would be saying.
Yeah.
Fullback.
And that's a fair point, but I counter with, all right, Georgia ranks 117th. Do 116 teams ahead of them all have fullbacks? Because Oklahoma is first,
yeah,
and Washington State is second. I don't think those coaches have ever seen a fullback.
I know. It's kind of head scratching.
Yeah. So I bet, but overall, Georgia's offense is phenomenal. So it's just like, yeah, it's a minor little detail, but it is one going back to the goal line stand the Gators made last year when we ran like 12 plays from the one, yeah, and couldn't score to, you know, them stuffing us on third and fourth and one on Saturday night. And it's baffling because you've got a terrific offensive line and just this great running back backfield, but Georgia struggles there.
We're nitpicking, right?
Yeah, we are.
I mean, a little bit, because when you get really good,
yeah,
there's this human nature, this tendency to want to find negative stuff, but if you have to nitpick a little bit, then that's kind of what happens, I guess.
For these next 2 weeks, it's not going to be a problem, but then against Florida, against even Missouri the week after that, and against Auburn with those terrific defensive fronts. I mean, Missouri's had one of the best run defenses in the country this season, that, you know, then it becomes those, you know, those third down and ones that maybe turn into a punt when they should have been first downs. They become bigger deals when the level of competition gets ramped up.
Let me ask you this. The Gators are a 12 to 13 point underdog at LSU Saturday night. If the Dogs and Gators were playing this Saturday in Jacksonville, what would the line be?
I think we'd be 6.5, 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking, I don't know why, a little bit higher, but I think, yeah, touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neutral field.
And Florida's definitely put it out. They played a little bit better than I think everybody thought they would.
Yeah.
That game Saturday against Auburn was just, that was a train wreck on offense.
It was, yeah, both teams hit four turnovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Florida's still pretty mediocre on offense. Their defense is legit. You got to give Grantham his due, but I'm not as worried about that game as I am. The Missouri game is suddenly like creeping in there, because Missouri reminds me of like Mississippi State last year. Like Mississippi State's defense a year ago, and we saw they had three first rounders taken. Like their defense last year was as good as like Clemson's and, yeah, Bama's.
Missouri, they got another guy on their defense that'll go first round too.
Yeah,
so they essentially had four, you know, first rounders.
But Missouri's they're kind of like that, where they're like a top 10 team, but because it's Missouri, you don't really respect them or think of them that way. And mm-hmm. I, you know, that Wyoming loss was definitely fluky to open up the season, so they've got that on their resume there. But they're off. That's in between Florida and, yep, Auburn. That's a game now that kind of, like, Georgia's going to be ready to play Florida. They'll be ready to play Auburn. But, you know, you always worry about that one moment where you could fall asleep.
What are we hearing on Kelly Bryant?
Yeah, that's something to watch, I guess.
Yeah. Don't know.
Yeah.
At this point. So, they're, let's see, who do they have this weekend?
Ole Miss.
Oh, that's right, Ole Miss. Who do you like that? Missouri minus 12?
Yeah. John Rhys Plumlee, is that his first road game?
Yeah, that may be. You wish he were still in the fold?
It turns out I think I do.
He's the reigning SEC freshman of the
league. Yeah, you know, it's like, that was something Jeff and I have kind of talked about too. It's, having seen him play now, you certainly wish that we hadn't let him get away. But also, if he was here, we wouldn't know that he's as good as he
That's
is,
because
he wouldn't be playing. So,
who started for them against Bama? Was that Corral?
I thought he did.
Oh, Plumlee started for them?
I thought he played most of the, I don't remember if he started or, okay, if he played most of the game, but.
So if this isn't his first road start, that was.
Okay, that's right. They were in Tuscaloosa,
yeah,
there.
So,
and they led 10-7 after the first.
Yes, and they covered.
Yeah, they did?
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did? Yeah, they did. Yeah, you're right. They got some late action in there.
That was a 1-6 weekend for me. I remember, because that was the one.
That was the one?
I went from a 6-1 to a 1-6. Funny how that works.
Yeah. All right.
Not that anyone cares.
There is precedent for this. The 80 and 81 Florida games ended with the same exact score, 26-21 Georgia. I've been sniffing out like a 41-17 result this season, which is the same final score that Georgia beat them by last year.
41-17 sounds about right.
And also happens to be a difference of 24 points.
So one of our former coworkers used to say, I'm not quite ready to make that prediction yet. No, I'm kidding. What was the exact Was the quote? We had a guy that
something about being too. I think it's a little too early to make that call or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, it was like, who do you think's going to win between Bama and Utah State?
Well, it's a little too early to make that call. Well, no, it's not.
No, I'm going to go ahead and say.
Go ahead and throw that out there.
Alabama's going to win that one.
I'm kind of in the same boat you are, though. I had like 42-10 in my head. Although it's just, we're not as good at noon as.
No, and they had a bye.
That's the thing that, like, it's not about them having the bye and Georgia having the night game. It's just the fact that we just don't seem to be as good at noon. But hopefully I guess what the Arkansas State game was a noon game, so I guess it blew them out. But still, it'll be fine.
And they played – the game was in Columbia, but they did – if they had 8 possessions that they made it across the Alabama 40, so they just – they moved the ball against Alabama's defense, which with Helinski, they just couldn't finish those drives because they only scored 23 points in those 8 those 8 drives, so that's averaging less than a field goal every time they were crossing Bama's 40.
Hey, they got Will Muschamp, Brian McClendon, and Thomas Brown.
Yes.
So all these former Georgia players rolling in to try and beat the Dogs.
Yep. Well, they had them last year too, right? Maybe not
for Thomas
Brown.
Yeah, but they had McClendon and Muschamp.
Yeah, McClendon's their OC, right?
Yep.
All right, so go Dogs. Hopefully Georgia will TCB. We'll come back next week, talk about Georgia and Kentucky. We'll see if the Falcons fire Dan Quinn after they lose to the Cardinals on Sunday.
Ooh. They're a favorite, though.
Oh, are they? Wow. Weren't they favorite against Tennessee 2 weeks ago?
How does that work? They're a 2.5 it may
on
be
the road?
Different today, but they're yesterday I looked, they were a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah, okay.
I know.
Yeah, that's free money.
Exactly.
All right, appreciate our sponsor, Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, also in Five Points. Again, subscribe to us, rate us, review us on iTunes, or you can listen anytime on demand to the Crossover Podcast at 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen on 960theref.com.